Thank you. Okay. Anyhow, continuing, there is a an order we're going to be going through the DID discussion, which was suggested by Manu, which is this this GitHub issues link. You want to, you know, get that open. That will be useful in our discussion. Any other items to add to the agenda? Oh, I should probably remind people that rebooting Web of Trust is coming up in 3 weeks. I'll post the link there. And there's also a repository topics and advanced readings here, including a submission by Manu that's kind of a high-level verifiable claims overview, Joe's functional identity overview. I've got a draft shortly to be uploaded of on self-sovereign identity, et cetera. So I encourage you to take a look at that. Any other new agenda items?
Hey, Chris, just not a new agenda item. I just unmuted Lionel. Lionel, we had some background noise from you. I think it was you. And I just unmuted you, so I think you're muted. Anyway, sorry. If you had background muse and there was a background sound and somebody in the background was talking about Bitcoin mining, that was you.
Okay.
Yes, that was me. I'm at the Technion at a Bitcoin week. An amazing conference. Yeah, I'll tell you about it when I see you. Go back on mute.
Great, thanks.
Okay. Introductions. Do we have any people new to the credentials community today?
I'm new. My name is Chris Chapman, and I am working with the. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay. I'm working with a group at an organization called Force 11, and we're working to. We're looking at technology and infrastructures for what we call scholarly commons. I'm interested in several things that you're working on. And there's some discussion.
I'm sorry, Chris. Can you get a little closer to your speaker? I missed the. It was validated comments, or I didn't understand what the technology was. There we go. That's better.
Scholarly commons.
Got it.
So essentially, we're trying to create an alternative system for scholarship in science. And we're interested in DIDs, elite data signatures, and things like that. So.
Cool. Thank you very much. We also have reintroductions. Trying to think who has not been reintroduced lately. Well, Ryan, you haven't been reintroduced lately, and you can tell us about Hurricane Irma.
Sure. So my name is Ryan Grant. I got involved in one of the prior conferences and helped out a little bit with the DID specification. My interest is on the Bitcoin side of things. So the Bitcoin method specification. And I've also committed to a PGP comparison method. More as a sort of teaching example of things that rebooting Web of Trust is attempting to fix. So I'm over here in Puerto Rico. We had a near miss with the giant Hurricane Irma. It was enough to take out our power for almost a week here, and I just got power back this morning, which I'm really excited about. That's otherwise things were pretty tame here in Puerto Rico. The thing I learned most about hurricanes is that it matters a huge amount how close it is. So that's all for me.
Yeah, my mom is in the Virgin Islands near there, and is safe and everything. But they're looking at maybe months of without power, and she has to basically climb to the top of the mountain in a rough road to do her cell phone calls. So hope. Yep. Or more. It was 3 months last time.
A good reminder to all of us that our urban infrastructure is fragile.
Yes. Blockstream just came out with our satellite feed, which is a non-censorable Bitcoin feed, and we were down for 19 hours. Even with all of the redundancy and things of that nature, it wasn't quite redundant enough. Hurricanes happen, earthquakes happen, et cetera. So we'll move on to the status of action items. We have a variety of work items that are in various levels of discussion and whatever. Kim, do you want to run through that list? And do you have that list handy?
Yes, sure. One second.
So we have DIDs is one of the work items. There's been fact discussion, but not a. I don't think there have been any changes yet, which is why we're going to be talking about today. Is there anything else that I'm missing, Manu, on the DID work item, action items?
No, I think, going down the DID spec bug triage list will help, but I think we have a full topic to discuss that today.
Okay. The topic of the privacy and security of verifiable claims came up today in the call earlier. We also have been talking about it at a higher level. I know Lionel has been very interested on this. I know Kim and I have also had some conversations about it, but I haven't really seen a kind of an organized next step. I know hoping but if not, then we definitely need to have this conversation because it's an issue that we have to move forward on. What any other comments on that work item?
Christopher, your voice for me at least started getting very scratchy. It was hard to hear.
Yeah, I was afraid to say so. Me too, Chris. You're all garbled.
Interesting. Okay. I'm on the left of my phone. Is this better?
No.
Okay. Look, I may have to get off of the live phone. The wind phone or whatever. I'm not sure what else I can do.
Yeah, you might try connecting, Christopher. It might just be a software glitch.
Be right back.
I'll keep running through the action items.
It's some kind of problem of the commons or something where I always think I'm the only one who's hearing garbled, and you think you're the only one, and no one says anything.
Okay. Is this any better?
Much better.
Yeah,
better.
Perfect.
Interesting. Okay. Moving through the issues, we also have the two work items from Joe and I apologize.
David.
Any updates on those?
Yeah. Speaking for Joe, no. No update.
Wow, echo. Interesting.
Maybe I'll take over for just a second while CRISPR strains it out. So in advance of rebooting Web of Trust, we're going to be focusing very heavily on DID. We're trying to make sure that we're giving time to any of the other work items that need feedback to stay on track. So please reach out to us if you want some dedicated time in the meetings before rebooting Web of Trust. We'll probably do that for the data minimization and selective disclosure topic specifically. We've had some new thoughts on how to approach it to make it easier, so we'll send some updates about that. Let me move on to the other action items. We had one assigned to me for finish propagating the new name and mission statement. That one is done-ish. Everyone's been notified. There's been no feedback. So that's a good thing or a bad thing. We'll see how that goes. But the goal there was to get it done well in advance of TPAC, which we have. And so, unfortunately, we may not hear any pushback until then. Manu had an action item to follow up with Dan from EOS, which I think he's done.
Yes, it's still in process, but he has all the information he needs. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yep, so Dan has all the information that he needs, and we'll get back to us.
Can anyone hear me?
Yes, we can, Kim, but you can't hear us, unfortunately. We can hear you. You can't hear us.
I hear you now.
Okay,
perfect. Let's see. Okay, there was, sorry about all the difficulties this time. Manu had an action item to send journalist outreach email text to Moses, which I was copied on. That's done. Do you have anything you want to add there?
Nope.
Hey, Moses, I got a positive response from Reuters.
Nothing I
so,
see. TPAC meeting.
Kim.
CRISPR and I will be following up very
soon. Yeah, we can hear you, Moses. Kim can't hear you.
So that's it for the current action items. And hopefully
Kim, can you hear us?
CRISPR is back, and we can move on to the DID spec.
Kim, can you hear us?
Okay, so I'm back on. I'm moving off of live phone. I'm on the regular phone. We'll try experimenting with that again later. So when is our deadline, Manu, for the TPAC meeting discussion of getting into either a little 15-minute intro or whatever of what we're doing with the credentials? Mm-hmm. As doing in the and such. What's the, you know what the deadlines are for that?
So they like to have agendas out at least a month in advance, but that doesn't necessarily depend on. Sorry. So Wednesday, the Wednesday like plenary meeting is done the day of. So you really don't have to give anyone a heads up on that. But we really should, as a community, have our ducks in a row at least 2 to 3 weeks before then. You know, have presentations, know what we're presenting, that kind of stuff. So we're not stomping on each other's toes. So I would say that's the week after rebooting Web of Trust. If we can set a we're done deadline for October 15th, for everything we want to do on Wednesday, I think that would be good. For the actual face-to-face meetings, that should be done a month before, so end of September at the very latest. Luckily, you know, the chairs of the VCWG are in this group, so they know that we want to meet with them, and we just talked about that with them during the last call. So I think we're clear there. So the only thing that we need to figure out as a community group is what we're going to do on the Wednesday of W3C TPAC. And do that and figure that out, be done by October 15th.
And I'm presuming that what's the typical About time, 10, 15 minutes or?
An hour. You can meet for an hour, and you're competing against everybody else at TPAC's, agenda. So you need to pitch it as something exciting that's going to be the future of the W3C and get as many people into the room as you can. So there's a decent
bit. Okay, so it's open space.
Yeah, it's open space.
Okay. I know how to do that. Okay. So we have a deadline. We'll add that to the status that we have a deadline to finish that the week after rebooting. Any other action items we need to take care of? Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add about the journalist thing. I sent the invite to the former managing editor at Reuters, and he's very interested, and he's retired, but he said he would like to participate as well as bring somebody from Reuters who's still there. And this guy has a Pulitzer, so it's kind of a good catch. All right. And also he lives in Florida, and he was evacuating when he sent me he sent the email just before he left the house, and he said he'd get back to us after everything settles down. So who knows when.
Manon, did you still have an item?
No.
Okay. So, I wanted to respond. We have a sponsor who's for rebooting Web of Trust, who is basically renting a large house with like five rooms as crash space, especially some of our European colleagues who've got more expenses to come to rebooting. I'm still hoping that I can get Ernst & Young or the other parties to add to the expense scholarship reimbursement stuff. So if you're not able to attend for financial reasons, keep in touch with me, and I'll let you know as as funding hopefully arrives over the next couple of weeks.
Chris,
okay.
This is Lionel.
Go ahead.
Put me on that list because I haven't gotten any of the commercial entities I'm working with to fund this, and that's why I haven't registered yet, but I'm arranging my ticket and I'm coming, so that crash space sounds good.
Okay, and if anybody knows of people, part of the problem with Ernst & Young and some of these big people is they want, lots of stuff beforehand, and it takes, we've been trying to get something from them for like 6 months, and it's still in paperwork. But if other people know of people who should be sponsoring these activities, rebooting Web of Trust, et cetera, please let me know. Moving forward on the agenda, again, I like what Manu has done. He has, issue 21, kind of summarized which ones should maybe be first on the bug triage. So trying to figure out what the best way to do this is. So number 15, I guess, is the first one, which is proofs or signatures. That's, the summary of this one is that we, in general, should be talking about proofs and thinking about things in proofs because not everything will be a signature. Not everything will be a classic signature method, especially when we start talking about some of these privacy schemes and such. Manny, did you have any other comments, or how do we close this issue?
I think we need to first figure out if there's anyone that would formally object or oppose the change. I wanted to add a bit of detail. This came about because, the BTCR hackathon and the work that Christopher is doing raised, and Kim, and Ryan were doing, raised a number of questions around, you know, well, what about different types of ways of authenticating, of, you know, proving things. So we've got at least three classes that don't neatly fit into signatures. So we have the first one, you know, of course, is signatures. We've been talking about that, digitally signing to authenticate. The second class of stuff comes in through the Yoram use case. So how do we fit pseudonymous biometric proofs in here? So that's important. And a pseudonymous biometric proof, it would be a stretch to say that it's a signature. People say it's a face signature, but it's really more of a proof type. And then there are certain classes of proof of work that are not signatures. So we, meaning Digital Bazaar, has modeled our Equihash stuff as an Equihash signature. And it's, you know, you can kind of make that argument. But when you go into, like, biometric proofs, you're clearly in a territory where the thing that you're attaching to the verifiable profile or the verifiable credential is a biometric proof. Therefore, we have, you know, examples of use cases that we want to address where it is very clear that it's a proof, not a signature. So in order to make this change, what we need to do is we need to update either the linked data signature spec. So there are a couple of things we could do. We could change from linked data signatures to linked data proofs, and just say signatures are just one proof mechanism. If we didn't want to make a change that drastic, and there's no reason we can't make that a change that drastic, but if we didn't want to make a change that drastic, then we could just modify the linked data signatures libraries to accept a signature field on a piece of data on a verifiable profile and accept a proof field that has a signature in it. Dave Longley and I have already talked about this. It's not a big change. So you know, the change is a bigger change conceptually than it is from an implementation perspective. From an implementation perspective, we don't expect that it'll take like more than a couple of days to make the change across everything. So to summarize, I think Digital Bazaar is a plus one on let's start using proofs. And we're happy to do the first set of implementations to move us toward that model.
Thank you, Manu. I would also add to the list, there's a bunch of blinding proofs where you can basically prove I have the information and I can prove that I have it, you know, and which is yet another form of, you know, authentication or whatever. So, NetQ. Kim, go ahead.
So I just added your comment to that GitHub issue. So one thing that I'm wondering, we don't have to decide it right now. I guess my interpretation of the issue originally was not so much that we needed to update at the sort of code level, like the API level for linked data signatures, although that's a good idea. I thought that we were just talking about referring to signature versus proof in the DID spec. However, given that it sounds straightforward, maybe that would be a good change to pull in now. My one other comment is that I didn't understand the separate signature field and proof field. That seemed, I didn't understand why that would be useful.
Okay, Manu, go ahead.
Right. So the let me kind of talk about the why the low level change. So you know the reason we looked into doing a low level change for this is because currently, you know, all the code, all the data model, you know, all the data flying back and forth has this a text called signature there. And you look into the signature to figure out whether the data, you know, is valid or not. But there are other ways of proving that the data is valid aside from RSA signature and EDDSA, you know, style signatures. For example, you know, Christopher mentioned blind proofs, there are biometric proofs and things of that nature. So if we didn't make this change, there's a possibility in the future that you send the verifiable profile across and the signature field contains a biometric proof, which seems weird, right? Because the biometric proof isn't strictly a signature. The same thing with a blinding proof. It's not strictly a signature. So it's going to be confusing to developers looking at the data structure where they see the string signature and beside it is something that is like not a signature. The other thing that comes in here is when you have like multi-proofs. So let's say that in order to make a change, you have to do two things. You have to provide a signature from, let's say, a hardware security token, and you have to include a biometric proof, right? Those things are two things that go along with the data that you're sending. One of them is the signature, and the other one's biometric proof. And both of those things are in the subclass of proof. So that's why we're making an argument to go away from the signature field and go more towards a proof field that can contain either a signature, a biometric proof, a blinded proof, or you know any combination thereof. Did that help with kind of the low-level stuff, Kim?
Let me add that there's also the big deal here at this conference is the zero-knowledge stuff, which will also function as proof. So you can add to the list what they're calling ZK snarks and starks, and those also fit into what Nan has said.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, and I would just say, although, you know, this issue came up as a a DID issue with naming of a variety of different things in the DID spec, I think that it's probably a healthy thing for the credentials community, and I might even argue for all of the W3C communities to start, you know, being a little more careful as we move modern forms of security to generalize things as proofs rather than always talking about signatures. So. It's a change in the way we're thinking about security. Drummond, you're next on the queue.
All right. I was mostly just going to ask a question about this, which is this a matter of the semantics of what we call this particular element that it's better to call it proof, so that it's more general, or is there something, some other aspect to this issue that I don't understand yet?
I think Manu described it pretty well. There are ways of sort of architecturally thinking about how you do a signature as a proof versus some of these other proofs. And then it may result in some architecture API changes. I kind of look at the example of, a signature and a timestamp, in the same thing isn't just the same as having two signatures on something. They're subtly different. When we also start talking about other kinds of multi-proofs, it gets complicated. So. I think it can lead to some architecture and API changes.
Okay, but in terms of the issue, the actual change to the spec, what is being proposed? That's what's not clear to me.
Well, any place where we have signature listed as a field name, as a data format or whatever that we carefully reconsider, you know, is it actually a proof?
Okay. All right, that answers my question. That's all I had.
Thank you. Okay, so Manny, what's the next item on your triage list?
Just quickly, I think, you know, Nathan's got a couple of concerns about taxonomy change without further discussion. So I don't think this item's closed out yet. Drummond, to more specifically, you know, to be very specific about answering your question, we're replacing the word signature probably with proof just about everywhere. There's a semantic part of this, like the semantics of the word. We need to really nail down what we mean by that. And then when it comes to implementation, anywhere in the data model that we talk about signatures, we're probably going to start talking about proofs and proof mechanisms and things of that nature. So we have a list of changes that need to be made to the DID spec. There's much less that changes in the DID spec versus the linked data signature spec. Like, that's where most of these changes are made. And again, you know, this is a fairly broad sweeping change. Many of us believe it's better, but again, Nathan, I think, you know, wants to understand this stuff in a bit more depth. So I think that the next step here for at least item one is to start suggesting spec text changes across the board and see how people feel about that stuff. And I think it is going to take a couple of weeks for all of this stuff to sink in. The other question I had is whether or not what I said answered Kim's or address Kim's concerns, but I think, Kim, you're writing this stuff up in the issue tracker, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Okay, so, I'm sorry, who was speaking?
No, this is Drummond. I was just acknowledging that I get that this is potentially a broader or bigger change, some of the other implications. I know Nathan has some questions about it, so I don't know whether we're trying to, you know, discuss each of these and close on them or just review them with a full group in preparation for deeper discussions at Rebooting Web of Trust. Maybe if someone could clarify what we're trying to get done on today's call with each of these issues.
Basically, what we'd like, I'm not sure that, you know, we can close very much as far as, except for maybe trivial details, but I do want to get these changes or these proposed changes into a draft before rebooting so that the examples, I mean, we're going to be, you know, there's going to be some live code, and there's going to be people who are going to maybe want to start registering some simple DIDs and other things, and we'd like it to be a little bit more current in our thinking, because that's what allowed some of these problems to emerge in the first place, was, you know, actually implementing it and then and making it work, you know, ended up showing some problems. So I'd like to get it to that point. So the next set of items, there are three issues, 11, 10, and 4, which are all kind of what we're calling capabilities security model. There may be some debate of whether or not this is really capabilities or just a different way of, you know, generalizing things. So I'd like to leave that part of the debate off. But specifically, there's this in number 11, which is here. There's some discussion about you know, how we're doing it, how we've done it, where we were, you know, explicitly creating an area and then listing a bunch of proofs, when instead it should probably be a proof and then say what capabilities that proof has, I think is kind of the fundamental difference in number 11. Yes, so number 15 talks that. I'm sorry, I'm too many tabs. should keys describe what they're used for is related, and then is number 10 and number 4. Manna, do you want to kind of give us a high level on this and what we need to resolve or discuss?
Sure. I think this is one of the hardest discussions we're going to have. Many of the other things kind of fall out of this discussion. So I definitely don't expect us to make any kind of solid progress on this discussion today. But just to outline what we're talking about. So the current DID spec, as it stands right now, makes a distinction between ownership and control. And Dave Longley took some time this morning to explain issue with current DID spec. So the current DID spec says, hey, there's this difference between ownership and control, and it's a really important distinction, and we need to pay attention to it. The problem, I think, with the current spec here is that there is actually, when you go and you implement it, there is no distinction between those two things. Anybody that has proof of control has proof of ownership, right? It's just based on the way the current DID spec is written, you just automatically have proof of ownership if you have proof of control. So that is, you know, that's kind of an ambient authority problem. It can lead to confused deputy problems. There's a security problem there. What we have tried to do in this issue, in the Veris 1 DID spec, the DID method spec, is to highlight an alternative that makes it more clear what certain proofs are used to do what with the DID and the DDO. So for example, we have separated the concepts of authentication and authorization. So that's the primary change that, you know, is being suggested to the DID spec, is that instead of saying proof of ownership, proof of control, that we split it in a different way. We talk about authentication versus authorization to do something. So you always authenticate first, and once you're authenticated, then you have authorization to do X, Y, and Z. So that's what this whole discussion is about, is about, you know, proof of control versus proof of ownership, or authentication versus authorization. And we're suggesting the latter route because this is the standard route that's taken in ITF specs and RFCs and W3C security groups. And it is the proper way, at least we're asserting, it's the proper way to layer these concepts so you don't end up with confused deputy and ambient authority problems in the specification.
Okay. Ryan, you're next.
So in the last meeting, I asked very strongly for a specific confused deputy example. And this morning, I also took a look at this, and I have a few words that I'd like to throw into the meeting to perhaps clarify a little bit for people who would otherwise ask the same question that I did. I'm going to use the new words write authorization and authentication credential that came out of Digital Bazaar. I really like those words. Write authorization, which is called proof of control in the DID spec, should not allow changing authentication credential, which is called proof of ownership in the DID spec, because that violates the goal explained on page 10 of the DID spec, section 6.4, where entities assigned to help with key recovery can change the DDO's proof of ownership to also allow impersonating the identity's owner. And that's important because, as section 6.4 explains, proof of ownership is supposed to be separate from proof of control, so that an identity owner may wish to enable other entities to update the DDO without enabling them to prove ownership. And that's the problem that Manu and David at Digital Bazaar pointed out for. So thank you for that. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, Drummond, you're next.
I'm not sure if I understand this at all, and I don't want to take too long. I have a feeling this is a much deeper conversation. As soon as I heard this, you know, that the idea that the level of the DID spec, they're talking about authentication and authorization, I'm like, wait a minute. DIDs are about associating an immutable identifier that's resolvable with a public key, and then the ability to know who, you know, what are the criteria for actually changing that associated DDO. And so in my mind, it's like, wait a minute, all that's at the lowest level of PKI, and that's the purpose of, you know, of the DID spec. So I have a feeling I just don't understand what this issue is, and I'm probably going to have to have a longer conversation with Manu and Dave to understand what this is. I have not, just due to time considerations, been able to attend the Verifiable Claim Working Group calls, and I'm going to try and find a way to be able to do that. But I'm not sure I'm on the same page as to that distinction being relevant. I'm even worried that it's confusing the levels or the purpose of the DID spec, which is at the lowest level of cryptographic primitive. So anyway, that's just, I just wanted to get that feedback on the record.
Okay, so my main, so if you looked at it from, you know, some of our original discussions and such, you know, which goes all the way back to the working group with Lionel and whatever, you know, I kind of coined the terms control and ownership, and I warned everybody I wasn't really confident about those terms. You know, what has happened in the you know, year and a half or two since is that the terms didn't end up actually, everybody got confused about them. Because when I think about them in my head, I think about them from a more of a cryptographic sense rather than what necessarily what the words are. It is particularly obvious when you start talking about things like the ability to update a DID record in the BTCR spec, because in fact the proof for that is a hash of a key in the future that you've not revealed, and in fact can't even do anything with that, and that party, the party who basically does that revocation or does that, you know, that rotation, cannot issue credentials that are associated with the old ownership keys. So that becomes, you know, it's kind of explicit to the technology, to the crypto there. And so that's what started the thing at the BTCR hackathon, where we're, you know, A, everybody was confusing ownership and control, and B, we were finding that some of these things crossed over in ways when we started trying to apply it to non-Bitcoin stuff, such as Veres or Sovereign or Ethereum, in ways that reflected our words rather than, you know, kind of the real operations that were happening. That's kind of my summary on that. I'm mainly happy if we can get to the point where I like the kind of direction that we're going, of you know, saying here are some proofs and here are the you know, what those proofs can do, what their you know, what their privileges are. You know, I'm less you know, the exact words from there of what those privileges are you know, still can be worked out. But I like the general idea of, you know, here are proofs, and then here are the privileges that those proofs have. Okay, Amanda, you're next.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. You know, here's, yeah. I mean, so we've had this issue for a while now. So, you know, the authorization IO, you know, implementation goes back like 3 or so years. Let me get something out of here. So, original did implementation. So even way back in the day, we conflated in our, like, you know, original did implementation. So the link that I just put in IRC is from, you know, a long, long while ago, 3+ years ago. And you'll see that we have like an access control field and a public key field, right? So the public key we were using to do two things, both authenticate, and we were doing a bunch of other stuff with the public key field that we shouldn't have been doing, right? And then access control, I think we got that a little more right. We said, you know, access control, write permission to the DDO. That mirrors a bit more closely what we're suggesting the current thing's doing. But we're basically, what we're trying to do with this issue is identify like known bad things to do. So we should not do public key. Like our first implementation used public key. We are now saying that is the wrong way to do it. And in fact, we should probably have a list of things. Like you want a list of ways of proving that, you know, proving ways of authenticating. But based on the previous discussion we had in the call where we're saying we should really be talking about proofs, not keys, we're now saying, like, you shouldn't have a list of public keys. You should have a list of authentication credentials. Some of those might be keys. Some of those might be biometrics. Some of those might be ZK, you know, SNARK-based, you know, approaches. But we should be very specific about what those things can do. Those things are authentication credentials. The only thing you can use an authentication credential for is to authenticate, full stop, right? Though that list of things is a list of ways of creating proofs. It is not a list of, for example, only a list of public keys. So hopefully that's kind of, you know, demonstrating we're continuing to narrow what each one of these fields is and is capable of doing. Anytime we have a field that is, you know, a bit too broad, or we have a field where you can do like two or three things because you exist in that field, that's usually a warning sign. It means that we haven't gotten the capability that we're trying to describe narrow enough. And when we don't do that, that leads to security vulnerabilities. Almost always, right? So anyway, that's just to say that this I don't expect that this is going to be an easy thing for people to grasp right away, because it's taken some of us 3+ years to really come around to the right way to design this stuff. So, you know, all that to say, I expect the conversation to you know, extend through Web of Trust and even beyond.
Yeah. So, Drummond, specific to your comment, you know, you can use public key for a lot of different things, but you need to be very careful about how you reuse them and such. So, for instance, it is even recommended in many cases that you should use a different public key for encryption than you do for signing. Yes, I think in practice, in many cases, you must use the same key for multiple privileges. This will be very true in Bitcoin, which because it basically has a limited number of keys that you can put in to the blockchain, because we're, you know, leveraging an existing blockchain. but we should be explicit that the different functions of that public key are, you know, used differently, and you know that it's explicit what those things are, and that if you choose to reuse a proof for multiple features, for multiple privileges, as I'm calling them, then you know that makes it easier for a security person to look at this and go, hey, you know, there, you know, that choice might, you know, mean these problems. Whereas, you know, when we were kind of conflating some of these things, it was harder to spot where the problems were. That help? Drummond, go ahead.
I'm on the queue now. I think it helps. It sounds to me like, and some of the IRC were capturing this. It's in my mind the whole purpose of the DID spec has been to associate a persistent and resolvable identifier with a set of keys and a set of endpoints to solve a bunch of problems around, you know, a public key discovery and verification of those keys. So we're down at the level of key management, and of course, the whole DKMS, decentralized key management system, then depends on DID. The whole thing depends on DIDs. So, you know, I'm all in favor of adding more to key descriptions to make sure it's clear what a particular key is, you know, so the key owner is able to describe what the key is able to be used for, and also that keys have their individual ID, so you can specify the key in a DDO that you want to be used for, you know, for whatever the particular operation is. What I didn't get is this distinction. I mean, authentication is just one of the things you may want to do with one of those keys. So, I think we have this larger question of is DIDs fundamentally about key management, key discovery, endpoint discovery, or is it, is it now getting pulled in other directions, and I'm going to be super passionate about keeping it as simple as possible. Every bone in my body is telling me, you know, don't overcomplicate this spec. Use it as the most basic building block as you can for verifiable claims, for all the other things that, you know, key discovery and key management is going to need to be used for. And I realize
I agree with, you know, your general idea of not overcomplicating this, but the problem, I think the root problem is you are using public keys as a shortcut in your head, as a heuristic that has worked in the past for sort of generalizing things, and I think that we cannot quite do it that way. Yes, the DID will give you a proof that may happen to be a public key that you're going to be able to use in a variety of ways, but it'll be very explicit about what ways it can or cannot be done. And it's also very relevant to the sovereign case. I mean, I know you guys are mostly talking about CLSIGs for issuer proofs and such, but all of that technology can potentially, blinding technology can be potentially applied at the DID level. You know, you could have a confidential DID that uses blinding range proofs and ZKs. So to future-proof, we need to be able to say explicitly what it can and can't do. Manu, I'm going to let you close this because it's 10 o'clock, and we'll try to continue these other items offline.
Yeah, real quick, I want to just defer to Nathan. Drummond, I think we're very aligned in what we want. Like, so we want the spec to be simple. We want to make sure that it covers all use cases. And you said one thing where I think we've expanded beyond that. So you said, you know, DDOs are about expressing, you know, a key so that you can, you know, do things with it. I think we're extending past that now, But at the same time, I really hope that we continue to do what you say we should do, which is keep the spec simple, simple, simple. So I think what we're proposing doesn't remove anything. It doesn't add any fields, but it changes a few concepts such that we can do more than just tease in the future. And with that, I'll defer to Nathan.
So I was just going to add the conceptual. I'm actually quite in favor of the idea that we can prove a few things beyond just, key possession in order to validate ownership and control. I think that that's really useful. I'm just really concerned about the idea that types or contexts of control, meaning, what the intent is of this key, will leak into the DPO. And I'm also very concerned that the construct of claims and proofs will start to leak into the DDO as we start to express some of the authentication constructs. So I think we have to be really careful about how we're going to, or how far we're willing to go on both of those items. And we also want to make sure that the terminology that's chosen in order to create those distinctions doesn't create extra confusion. Because if we start saying things like, this key can be valid, but only when you're talking about this kind of data, we've just stepped into the abyss, and we're going to have really big problems with the ontology differences between different domains of expertise.
Yeah, that's where we want to get in. That's where, we get into the territory of verifiable claims or whatever, where they may wish to do additional things down at that level, but we should really focus on what is required for DIDs and to bootstrap, but no more than what's necessary to bootstrap.
Yes.
So what are the privileges necessary for bootstrapping and maintaining a persistent identifier is the problem space. Okay, so we're going to close this for today. Next week's topic is also going to be DIDs. I'm hoping to have some more people to talk about their specific implementations or requirements for DIDs. Obviously, Drummond's organization is doing some things, but I'd love to have, I'm hoping to have the people from Consent and maybe somebody from Uprove, and maybe even somebody from Blockstack, to talk about their requirements for DIDs for next week. And then, Kim, we also have a guest next week.
It's the following week.
Okay.
Yeah, 26.
One of the things that's open is the last week, the 26th, before rebooting Web of Trust. We've got a couple addition choices of what we can talk about at that. If you've got an opinion about what would be, the best to talk about right before our face-to-face, let Kim and I know.
Did inventory of selected disclosure and data minimization get on that list?
That would be, yeah, if we're ready for that, that could be something we could bring up then.
That sounds good. Also, next week I have a conflict, I'm afraid. So I won't be on this call.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you, everybody, and we'll continue this discussion in the issues. I encourage everybody to subscribe to the issues of these different repos. It's hard to do this in the list. It's really best to do it in the issues. Thank you very much. Everybody have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks all. Bye.
Yeah, bye. Thanks, everyone.